In the beginning, I wasn't really open to collaborative efforts because, one, I didn't know how to do it effectively. And I was just looking at it as they want me to work for free. I'm just going to be honest. The gist of it is being able to find someone, partner with them, you guys adding equal value. That is the key thing to pay attention to. My goal is to be the best global program ever. And the same thing for you. You guys are aspiring to be the greatest, right? The easiest way to do it is partnering with other people. Welcome to another episode of Raising the Bar, which is the number one event-driven podcast on the internet. And as always, I'm your fabulous host, Precious Stevens, aka the Draping Queen. And I'm bringing you guys the ins and outs of the draping world. Now, here at the Posh Academy, we only believe in dropping gems. So in every episode, we discuss the secrets, the challenges, and the untold stories of event draping. So let's drape it up and dive in. So in today's episode, we're going to be discussing why you're not getting booked, sis. I chose to discuss this topic because a lot of people get in the industry and they struggle with finding clients. And I want to just help you guys because it's really not what you think. So let's start with reason number one, guys. And that is going to be a lack of visibility. One of the biggest reasons that you may not be getting booked is simply because not enough people know about you, right? If your social media presence is lacking, or worse off, you don't even have one, it's time to change that. There are so many different ways that you can become visible in your marketplace, but you cannot turn your eye on social media. Social media gives you the opportunity to get in front of so many more eyeballs that other marketing lanes don't really allow. You should have a cyber home, and you don't have to be out there on all the platforms. You can just really pick one. Pick one and dominate it. But if no one knows who you are, how can you expect them to show up at your doorfront saying, hey, what do you have? I want to buy it. It's not going to happen. So what you can do right away to change that is go and figure out one platform that you want to pay attention to and be consistent. Don't get overwhelmed feeling like you got to be on all of the platforms at the same time. Let's just start with one. And don't feel as if you have to post every day because you don't. The main thing is you need to develop some kind of consistency when it comes to your posting. Because guess what? You're not going to show up on day one and everybody's going to just start engaging with your post. It's going to take some time. It's going to take some testing. And you're going to develop what it is you enjoy and don't enjoy about that platform. So when people get into the social media realm, you have to realize that it's an experience for you as well. It's not a set it and forget it, right? It doesn't happen that way. I don't care what apps are out there that say it's going to post for you every day. People are connected to people, right? Now, you can have some kind of app that posts your stuff every day, but guess what? Long story short, they're going to end up stop engaging with your account because it's no person behind it. It's no emotion. It's nothing that they can really tap into. You want to figure out one platform, start with one at least, and you want to start going and finding your ideal audience. And the easiest way to do that is find your competitors, right? Don't find people that's in the industry. You want to find people that they're at a level, one, you aspire to be, or at least at an even playing field. And engage with their followers, right? Because their followers are the ones that you ultimately want to work with. So that's who you should be engaging with. There are so many different ways that you can become visible in your marketplace. You just got to choose which one works for you. You have guerrilla marketing. You have email marketing. So many people think email marketing is dead. And guess what? It's not. Email marketing is still very powerful, right along with text marketing. The main thing is you need to have eyeballs on your business. The common three areas where marketing fail is one, you're not marketing at all, right? If you're not marketing, it means no one knows who you are. The second thing is you're marketing or you're putting yourself out there, but no one wants what you have. Then the third thing is you may have got some traction, you may have had some sales and find out, once they bought it, they found out they didn't want it, meaning they're not coming back. This has to be a cycle that even though you show up and you're visible in your marketplace, it has to be a cycle where you're trying to enhance people's experience because that's all about sustainability, right? So pick your lane. I love email marketing. A lot of people say it's dead, but for me, it definitely keeps me in the game. I am not a person that enjoy being in front of my phone all day, every day, doing a bunch of social media marketing. However, someone else, that may be their jam. So it works for them. So the key thing here is figure out which one works for you, because you still have some people that do in the neighborhood marketing, right? They'll still go to strip malls and pass out their information. It's really all about your business model and where you can get the most business or you could be the most effective. The next thing is paid marketing. Like, paid marketing is always going to amplify the ability to get more eyeballs on your business. So before you get into paid marketing, though, you should be clear on who it is you want to work with, where they are, and exactly how can you show up and provide whatever service or solution that they need. So the easiest way is start with one of the areas I mentioned earlier, which is email, social media, going to the marketplace, like the strip malls. They're all different ways of effective marketing. Find out which one you like the most. So that brings us to reason number two, and that's really failing to showcase your expertise. Now, this may have ruffled a couple feathers when I said it, because why? It's very common in the industry. Now, on one hand, you say you're a draping designer, you're a draping pro, whatever it is, yada, yada. But on the other hand, where is the proof? Where is the evidence? If your portfolio does not reflect that, then you're really missing out on so many potential clientele. Now, a person would think when they're first getting in the industry that they have to have a portfolio of things they've actually done right away. And guys, you don't. You could easily build a portfolio by creating mock-ups right in your home. That was how I easily got into the industry and was able to grow really fast, because I would clear out my entire living room. I would push the couch over. I would push the chairs over, and I would have a blank canvas. I made sure it wasn't no tennis shoes in the background, wasn't no silverware on the counter. It was no one could tell that I was in my home, and I would go and set up my backdrop. And I did this like almost every weekend. And that is how I built up my portfolio. Then I would take those photos and I would display them on my social media. And that is what people were attracted to, because they can see the thing that I actually did. They didn't have to know where I did it at. They just saw my skill and they was attracted to that. And guys, I'm telling you, this may seem like a lot of work. Draping is physical. However, this is much easier than it sounds. You can really start off with what you have. Some people think they have to have all the fabric and all of the kits. You're in your home. When you're in your home, you can get away with, you know, a nip tuck here and a nip tuck there. I've even used sheets, guys, because I didn't have adequate amount of fabric. However, I knew how to create the look that I was trying to create. Not only that, you want to know what else is going to do? It's going to help you practice and master your craft. That is where the game changer is, because the more you practice, one, you're building the portfolio, and two, you're practicing your craft. So guys, don't be overwhelmed. Don't overthink it. Get in your living room, move that stuff aside. And if you don't have a living room, right, barter with someone else. You may have friends in the industry and you guys can do a style shoot together. Maybe someone have a garage, or maybe someone have a basement and you can do the backdrop and they can do the treat table as a mock-up. The beauty of it is you guys can cross promote your office and get a wider audience because you're two different entities, right? So think of things this way, where you can actually get into the industry and get more visible, get more eyeballs on your business and showcase what you do. Don't go grab the stock photos. People don't want that. They want to know what can you do. So implement that and you'll see a change right away. So here we are at reason number three, guys, and this is the pricing pitfalls. Again, another common issue. And the real thing is, you got to realize, if you're pricing yourself out of the market, or worse, what if you're selling yourself short? If you could relate to that, I need you to put the word short in the comments. I'm trying to tell you, finding a sweet spot can be the game changer. Main thing with this, the easiest way I help people come up with pricing models or pricing strategies is stick with the rule of three, right? In draping, there is no formula for length times width equals the amount. It's so many different other elements that go into pricing, because someone that's been in the game for 10 years versus someone that's been in the game for 2 years, your pricing strategies are totally different, right? So you want to come up with your sweet spot. I always do the rule of three, which is be my basic pricing strategy, meaning it could be anywhere from $300 to $600 for a backdrop, right? Then you could go to your intermediate level and then go to your top tier level. That's going to help you be able to not necessarily come up with a sound estimate, like an exact dollar amount, but at least you can give someone a gauge of where they would fall if they come to you and say, hey, this is what I want, how much it costs. Because unfortunately, guys, that's how it is in the industry today. Like people, this is the microwave world. They want an answer really, really quick. And if you're not equipped to provide them with that, you know where they're going. Baby, they're going down the street to somebody else that got the answer right away. So stick with like the rule of three, come up with three different pricing points that you can easily relate to and let them realize this is an estimate, keyword, estimate. That way you're not locked into a pricing point. So now we're up to reason four, and that is neglecting networking. Guys, I'm gonna be super honest with you. This isn't something I paid a lot of attention to in the beginning. However, building relationships in the event industry, I've realized is a non-negotiable, right? If you're not networking effectively, you're missing out on not necessarily so much money, but opportunity. When they say collaboration is king, it really is. In the beginning, I wasn't really open to collaborative efforts because one, I didn't know how to do it effectively. And I was just looking at it as they want me to work for free. I'm just going to be honest, but that's really not the gist of it. The gist of it is being able to find someone, partner with them, you guys adding equal value. That is the key thing to pay attention to. You want to get into a situation or a relationship where it's a win-win. You may be strong in one area that they are not, and vice versa. However, this person has an audience and you have an audience. And what better way than cross-promoting to give you more opportunity and give them more opportunity? Being able to network effectively now today has been a game changer for me. This is something I purposely done in 2023. And even moving forward with 2024, you guys will see me collaborating with a lot of different industry greats, right? Because that is the whole goal. Like my goal is to be the best global program ever. However, my capacity won't really allow me to do that in this short amount of time that I want to do it. And the same thing for you. You guys are aspiring to be the greatest, right? The easiest way to do it is partnering with other people. You don't want to look at it as competition, competition, competition. Like I said, competition is great. Competition should be an indicator that you have something that other people want, meaning you deserve to be in the marketplace because there are potential clients. And if you didn't have no competition, I would tell you, go back home, go back to the drawing board and figure something out. But if you do, let that be a positive indication that you're on the right path. But don't let it hinder you and feel like you got to keep it all to yourself, because it's so many other people within your marketplace that can help you get further faster. So our last one, guys, is reason number five, which is ignoring feedback. Believe it or not, feedback is your secret weapon for growth, guys. If you're not actively seeking and implementing feedback, then guess what? You're stunting your progress. You have no idea what people like or don't like from the services or products that you provide. People that still is early on in their business, they fear the rejection, right? They have all this mindset issue. So I totally get it. But the moment you open yourself up to that and realize that it's going to make you a better CEO, it's going to make you a better entrepreneur, you'll be able to take the feedback and implement the necessary changes to make people's experiences better. When you start to see clients come back to you, they enjoy their experience, but don't let it stop there. Like, I want to know everything. I want to know what you like, what you didn't like, because I am going to tailor it to my marketing efforts. If something that they didn't like, and let's just say it was a part of my process, like I do it for everyone, I would really take that information and just take account, were they the only one? Is this an isolated thing? Or is this something that I can possibly enhance to make the experience better? And if it's something that they say they absolutely love, I'm a 10X that. I'm a go all the way, right? Because that's the stuff that's working for you. They're the things you want to pay really close attention to. So the easiest ways I get feedback from working with my clients or working with my students is I ask them. I flat out ask them, right? When we're in class, they have an end of the class survey. When we are working together, I do not consider that workflow complete unless I've gotten some kind of feedback or testimonial. I don't know what it is, but now being, you know, in it a little longer, being in my business a little longer, I need that information in order for me to always look for ways to get better or change something or whatever it is. But the main thing is you cannot take it personal. This is a business. You are selling, again, a promise, right? Now, you may carry out your promise and you got to be open if someone feels that way. So again, give out surveys, right? Don't be afraid to ask them, what was that experience like? But the main thing is I would make sure it's documented. Now, I wouldn't do a verbal because it's kind of like it's in the air. But if it's documented, like an easy type form or survey form or Google form, it's trackable. This is how you start collecting data that you can go back, refer to, and really pay attention to what's happening. When you first get some feedback back and it may not be what you want to see or what you want to hear, you ain't going to act on it right away, right? You need time to kind of digest. Be like, you know, because initially you might be like, who are they talking to? But that is not the right stance that you should take as a CEO or entrepreneur. Give yourself time, let it digest, let it marinate, and then always look for ways that you could have made it better. Not saying the client is always right. However, you always play a role in every experience that you are involved in and always look from your standpoint, right? Like, what could you have done to make it better? This is the thing that's going to just light your clients up. Like, they ain't going nowhere else. And anytime they need something, they coming to you. So implement these strategies. And I'm trying to tell you, you will have your forever loyal clients. That wraps up today's episode on why you're not getting booked for your draping services. If you found this video to be helpful, show your girl some love and drop a like and subscribe to the best draping podcast on the internet. And guys, let's keep this conversation going and let me know what are some of your craziest things you've ever done to land a client. Don't be embarrassed because quite naturally, somebody else probably did the same thing. We're doing a free giveaway for one of our digital tutorials and the person who has the most interesting story actually wins. So don't be shy, guys. Share some stories in the comments below. And again, I want to thank you for tuning in to Raising the Bar. I'm your girl, Precious Stevens of the Posh Academy, signing off.